Good morning, and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship's virtual Sunday service. We are affectionately also known as WUF, and our congregants are often referred to as WUFers. My name is Salima Malson, and I use the pronouns she and her. I can't tell you how delighted I am to be serving as your lay leader this morning, and to be the one who gets to officially welcome you, whoever and wherever you are at this moment, to our summer season of playfulness. Our June theme song is Let's Go Fly a Kite. And while we won't be doing a lot of that particularly, we will focus throughout the summer on lighthearted music, poetry, humor, storytelling from a lot of woofers. We're almost out of the woods after a long, hard year, and we and the worship team are hoping that virtual services that can be watched anytime after they're posted on Saturday evening will be just what we need as we make our way toward regathering in person. I encourage you to check the announcements in your order of service to see what else you might want to participate in this week, but especially to invite you to join us today for our virtual coffee hour at 11:30, when we will check in with each other, share our joys and sorrows, and talk about the service with today's guest presenter, storyteller Will Hornia. And this afternoon, in person, on the WUF grounds between noon and 2 p.m., please come to share flowers in preparation for next week's Flower Communion with Reverend Tracy. Now, if this is your first time to be with us and you don't have an order of service but would like to know more about who we are and how we stay connected during this time of social distancing, don't hesitate to get in touch with our congregational administrator. Her contact information is on the screen. So, to begin, I'm going to light a chalice, the Unitarian Universalist symbol of our shared and scattered faith. If you're lighting one at home as well, know that together we are creating the light that draws us into this breathing circle of caring and compassion. Join me in speaking our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. And before we set off on this morning's adventure, let us take just a few moments to consider these words from the late Mary Oliver's poem, The Summer Day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Today's service is about flying kites, going fishing, and camping, and the pure pleasure of doing nothing. We are so happy, so excited to host Will Horniak as our speaker. If there was such a title as Oregon Storyteller Laureate, Will would certainly hold that title. He's been telling stories from around the world for years, mythical tales that never fail to caress our hearts and our funny bones. So without further ado, here we go. Welcome, Will Horniak.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Will Horniak, storyteller, and I'm really happy to be here this morning to share a portion of the service for the West Hills Unitarian Fellowship. Thanks so much for the invitation. The stories today are all under the theme of Let's Go Fly a Kite. And even though I don't have any specific kite flying stories, these are all stories about summer and fun and recreation and the great art of doing nothing. And that's an art that I've been practicing for a long time. So I'm happy to share some stories along those lines. I wanted to start out with a story for all ages, and this is one of my absolute favorite tales. It's a story that belongs to the great Nez Perce tribe, one of the great tribes of the inland Northwest. Their traditional homeland was, of course, up in the Wallowa Mountains, but also along the Salmon and the Snake and the Clearwater Rivers in what is now Idaho and Oregon. And they say in this story that in the long, long, long ago time, before there were any two-legged people like us walking around, there were still people. There were flying people and four-legged people. There were slithering people, the snakes, crawling people, the bugs. Well, all of those people, they had to gather together because they were preparing the earth for the coming of the two-legged people. And they had to make sure the mountains were just so high and the rivers ran in the right directions. And, of course, they had to decide how long the day was going to be and how long the night was going to be. And so they got together to do that. And, of course, all of the people came. The coyote people were there. Mm-hmm. What do you think they sounded like? Ready? Oh, 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 oh! Exactly. And behind them came the mallard duck people. Quack, 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 quack. They're very talkative people, the mallard duck people. And behind the duck people, there were the mole people. Now, shh, the mole people are very quiet people. But, of course, the first one to speak about how long day would be and how long night would be, the first one to speak was Grizzly Bear. And Grizzly Bear was the first to speak because he was always the first to speak. You know the type, right? And Grizzly Bear, he said, 6 months day. Yeah. Oh, 6 months night. Well, you know, you can imagine, nobody really wanted 6 whole months of day and 6 whole months of night. But nobody wanted to argue with Grizzly Bear. So everybody just sort of said, okay, I guess we could make that work. You know, compromise is the essence of community. Everybody said stuff like that except for this one tiny little frog. Can you imagine a little frog looked up at a grizzly bear? And frog just looked up and said, mm-mm. Frog said, one day, one night. Mm-hmm. Grizzly bear, he looked all around. And finally he looked down, and he saw this tiny little frog. And bear just said, 6 months day, 6 months night. But frog said, mm-mm.
One day, one night.
6 months, day, 6 months, one day, one night, one day, one night, 6 months, day, one day, one night, one day, one night, one day, one night. Well, they just kept arguing, you see. And Grizzly Bear did what grizzly bears do. He just got louder and louder and louder. 6 months, day, 6 months, one day, one night, one day, one, 6 months, day, 6 months, night, one day, one night, one day, one night. Well, finally, this grizzly bear shouted so loud, you know, 6 months, day. And he shouted for so long, 6 months, night. Well, he finally, 6 months, months, he finally lost his voice. And when he did, Frog just looked up and said, one day, one night. Well, that bear, he went way, way off into the mountains. And up there, he slept and he slept and he slept about 6 long months. But that little frog just kept speaking up. And because of that, ever since then, every winter time when it gets cold, well, you watch. Grizzly Bear, he goes to sleep for a long, long time. But all the rest of us, we just have one day, one night, one day, one night, one day, one night. So you know what? You don't have to have a big, 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 big voice to make a big, 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 big difference, but you do have to speak up. Let's thank the great Nez Perce tribe for that story. Thanks for listening to it also.
Even in the midst of summer days filled with sunshine and busy with play, it's good to take a few moments, as Mary Oliver suggested, for prayer. Let's do that now. I invite you to bring to mind or speak aloud the names of anyone you may wish to join us in this circle of quiet reflection.
Well, speaking of the art of doing nothing, nothing spells doing nothing better to me than going fishing. And I love to fish, and I'm not really a successful fisherman very much, but it doesn't matter. I just like to get out on the rivers and walk the streams. So I wanted to tell you a little story. It's a story poem. And it's a spiritual story because, you see, where we live here in Oregon, you know that it's the home to many of the world's religions. We have Hindus here and Buddhists and Muslims and Christians and Jews and practitioners of Native American spirituality, shamans, you know. But actually, the original religion of Oregon, the first religion of Oregon was fishing. That's right. It is the first human faith-based activity. And the beautiful thing about the Church of Fishing, which I belong to a certain denomination called the Church of Trout Fishing. And the beauty of it is you can belong to that church and you can belong to any other church you want to, except it brings up sort of a theological dilemma on Sunday mornings in spring and summer in particular, where you have to decide at which church will I worship. And this little story poem speaks to that. It was an early Sunday morning, one of those priceless jewels of spring, and I was headed out the back door for church when I heard the strangest thing. It came from a corner of my deck beneath the roof overhang where my fishing gear is kept, and it sounded like the moaning of some dying soul, but all that stood before me was my waders and creel and fishing pole. But then these words came right from it, and this I'll swear to God. Will, have you got a moment? It's me, your fishing rod. And I looked, and he said, I know it's Sunday morning, time for church, and that's where you're headed out, but I'm thinking today we could worship at the Temple of the Trout. There'll be a choir up there of rippling waters, a little altar of earth and stone, and all gathered beneath the spires of fir and cedar, the greatest cathedral ever known. And you being born and raised a Catholic, well, I know you got to kneel and pray and fast. We could do all three today at the High Clackamas. Now, I stood there in shock, because I know a fishing rod can't talk, and just as I'm thinking this is my imagination or somebody's practical joke, up again the trout rod spoke. Well, you know, even Jesus Christ was a fisherman, and I think it was a sign that most of the guys he hired as disciples, well, heck, they worked with boats and hooks and nets and lines. And when it come time for them to feed the multitudes, did they argue over the dish? No. They just said, we'll get some bread and serve fish. Well, on and on this trout rod rambled, and I stood there in a trance, but then realized, as if by magic, I had changed my shirt and shoes and pants. I grabbed my rod and my creel and threw them in the truck along with my waders. Not 15 minutes passed, and I was east of Estacada. But not as a man ignoring his duties, not just some kind of bum gone fishing, but more like a monk, a priest, a druid on a celestial sort of mission. And in a pious, devoted way, I parked my rig and ambled pretty much in meditation to the river, and then solemnly affixed a worm to my hook beneath the eyes of the great forgiver. And I pulled back the pole and I casted out my line, but I prayed, with this worm, thy will be done, Lord, not mine. And then, as if a voice called out to say, my son, I know your strife and struggle, a miracle occurred, and my trout rod bent over double. And that reel went singing out, zzz, zzz, as some heaven-sent trout for a good quarter hour did play. But then I noticed as it headed on down and down right towards the whitewater spray. Well, I waded right in up to my knees, my waist almost up to my chin, because I knew if that fish hit the rocks, he'd get free. But that's when my line suddenly went slack, because the fish doubled back and now was headed right for me. Well, I hadn't seen him yet, but when his dorsal fin finally pierced the sky, that thing stood 6 feet high, which explained my trout rod's now permanent contortion. I'd come angling for trout, but hooked in, no doubt, to a fish of biblical proportion. And I screamed, and I turned, and I went running back towards the bank, but I slipped on a mossy rock, and I sank, and that fish come up underneath me and swallowed me down hook, line, sinker, and pole. And I fought and struggled and screamed, get me out, Lord, save my soul. And I hollered and hollered and hollered. And that fish, he just kind of swallowed and swallowed and swallowed. But it was way down there in a dark fish belly that a white light did suddenly surround me. And this is the moment that has since changed my life. For there, I saw standing all around me my friends and my family, and kneeling right beside me was my wife. The fish had somehow just disappeared, along with my waders and creel and other gear. And as my eyes slowly round me did search, I realized with alarm there were four men pinning down my legs and arms, and that's when I realized, oh, I'm in church. And as my wife later explained, I'd kept the congregation quite entertained when from a deep slumber I cried, get me out, get me out, get me out! But their laughter soon faltered as I dragged the ushers kicking and screaming back and forth from the altar, mistaking them, I guess, for that trout. It took a quarter hour before they finally had me fully overpowered, and by then not just a little damage had I done. I kicked down the pews, and I cursed as I hollered. I tore the shirts off the ushers' backs and the ties right out of their collars. But as I was leaving church that day, our priest just looked at me and said, son, the Lord is a great forgiver, and your friends as well. If they don't cut out your liver, I'm sure they'll come round one by one. But we'll just remember this one thing on these Sunday mornings of spring. Whenever you're tempted by the trout, the salmon, the bass, the sturgeon, the shad, the steelhead, even the lowly little perch, the Lord can everywhere be found, in every rock and tree and stream and square inch of ground. And so, son, seek him there and stay out of my church. And that's called the Temple of the Trout. Well, one final note on fishing. It's a quote that I loved from the Muslim tradition, which is Allah does not deduct from the allotted time of man those hours spent fishing. That's a good thing to remember. In honor of what sometimes, in a world which is measured by nanoseconds now, you know, to have activities in which we feel timeless, eternal, connected to the all that is. It's good to know that there are activities like that that take us away, take us far, far away. So, well, I think that storytelling or certain kinds of stories do that as well. They have a certain nature of whimsy. They cross the threshold deeply into the realm of imagination. And one of my favorite storytellers is a man whose name is Joaquin Miller. He's long since passed on to the other side, but Joaquin Miller was an Oregonian, and he actually came out to the Oregon Territory in the 1840s with his family. He was about 12 or so, and they made the journey from Missouri all the way out to the Willamette Valley, and they settled near Salem on a farm. And he was fascinated by the natural world around him, and he had a specific interest in bears and had many encounters with bears in Oregon and also in Northern California. He eventually wrote a great book, which is called True Bear Stories, and this is an excerpt from one of those. It's told in the first person, so I tell it in the first person also. So imagine Joaquin Miller telling you this tale. Now, first thing y'all need to know about bears, they love music. That's right. You see, bears love music, well, as much as bears love honey. And, of course, that means a bear loves music about as much as he loves his own life. Now, I can tell there's some of you out there thinking, well, you know, that could be true. And most of you are thinking that storyteller up there, he's talking through his hat. But you see, I know for a fact, I do. Bears, they love music. Because, you see, one day it was myself and my daddy and our hired hand, Mr. Light Howard, and we were making our way to the mill in our wagon. It was a wagon that was filled with sacks of wheat that we had threshed with a flail and winnowed out with a wagon cover, and we were being pulled by a sturdy team of oxen. But the mill was 2 days' ride, and so we camped for the night on the banks of the Kalapuya River. And just as the sun was setting and the moon was on the rise, I pastured the oxen, I watered them, and my daddy made a crackling pine log fire. Well, we ate a cold supper, and then we leaned against a log. And Light Howard, he took out his fiddle, and he commenced to play. Now, old Light, he fiddled and fiddled and fiddled, and I believe he helped to fiddle the sparks up through the fir boughs and into the sky. Light Howard played tunes like Zip Coon and Old Dan Tucker and Money Musk, the kind of music that once used to keep the feet of hunters and trappers dancing on barroom floors from Hudson Bay clean out to the Oregon Territory. And on, Light fiddled, and the music was so sweet, I believe that the stars came down just a little lower to hear the sweet strains of Light's tunes. But then I noticed my daddy's hand slowly drift out in the direction of his Kentucky long rifle, and I knew there was going to be trouble. You see, my daddy, he was like a mountain man. He could sense things before they happened, and quicker than you could spit, he had that rifle up and pointed out into those dark woods, and I jumped up to see what it was. But my daddy pushed me behind him to protect me, and then I looked over his shoulder, and I could see what it was he was aiming at. Here was a huge black bear scurrying up over the bank of the Kalapuya, and then another, and then a third, three bears coming right towards our camp. My daddy, he had that rifle trained right on those bears, and Light Howard, well, Light Howard hadn't sensed anything yet other than the sweet strains of his own fiddle music. But my daddy tossed a stick into the fire, and when the sparks flew, Light Howard, he forsook that fiddle for his rifle. And now you could see both those men had those guns trained right on those bears as they come closer and closer and closer. And then those three huge bears, they just kind of sat down on their haunches. But the men kept the guns trained right on those bears, because you never know what a black bear is going to do. But after a while, well, those bears not seeming to pose any particular danger, and Light Howard being more of a fiddle player than a rifleman, and a Kentucky long rifle being sort of a heavy, cumbersome implement, well, you might say the weight of that argument persuaded Light Howard to forsake his rifle, and he picked up his fiddle. And right in front of those three huge bears, Light Howard, he commenced to play. He commenced to play music so sweet like I'd never heard him play before. And on and on and on he fiddled. And as he did, those bears just seemed to relax. And one of those bears put out his big thick tongue almost as if he was tasting the music. And as time wore on, one of those bears, well, he seemed to be tapping his foot, not exactly in rhythm to Light's tunes, but somewhat similar to it. And another one of those bears, well, he just seemed to be kind of nodding his head a little bit this way. And on and on and on, Light played that music. And we three men and those three bears, we just sat there enveloped in the beautiful atmosphere of Light's tunes as the milky white moon drifted up into the sky. And on, Light played until, well, at long last, that fiddle player could play no longer. His chin sunk into his chest, and Light Howard fell asleep. And when he did, the music stopped, and not long after that, those bears, they got up, and they turned and dropped down on all fours, and we watched them as they drifted off into those inky dark woods beneath that milky white moon. Light Howard and my daddy and I, we slept around the fire. And that night, the oxen came up around us real close. And the hot breath of those oxen, it descended down upon us in spumes, just like so much incense. Now, I know you're thinking out there, well, you know, that could be true. And most of you are thinking that storyteller. He's talking through his hat. But I know for a fact, bears, they love music. And that's the tale by Joaquin Miller called The Music-Loving Bears from the book True Bear Stories. So, one thing I love about that tale is the great power of music to create atmosphere, to change the very atmosphere of a scene, of a situation, of a place. And also, to me, it kind of harkens back to a time when perhaps human beings and animals did share a particular kind of closeness and, you know, a certain common love for life and for place, too. Thank you.
as we hear from Will Horniak his love poem for Oregon.
Speaking of that, I wanted to finish with a story about place. It's a poem. During the summertime, when the weather is a little bit better, I love to travel around Oregon to camp, to fish, to hike, to paddle. And years ago, I wrote a love poem to Oregon. The name for love of place is called topophilia. And this is a love poem that I call my ode to Lady Topophilia, who is Oregon to me. And it names some of the places that are special to me. But it's my Oregon love poem. And so I dedicate it to this time of year when many of us are out and about and traveling and enjoying the great beauty of where we live here, and also just relishing the wonder of this place where we live. Lady Topophilia, Oregon, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love your hot, rugged, rocky, curvaceous, Crooked River Canyon country. I swoon at the scent of your John Day River Country junipers, your Oahe sagebrush perfume, your hot summer Ochoco mountain pine sap. But is there anything lovelier than the scent of your Willamette Valley lilac in springtime, lilac planted in deep, dark, rich alluvial soils? But Lady Topophilia, I love even the odoriferous aromas you wear. At low tide, beneath dark Columbia River wharves at Astoria, where mammoth-sized sea lions sprawl over themselves like drunken sailors, barking and howling and singing off-key, while offshore, wind-whipped winter rains and deadly ocean sea swells keep sailors and fishermen anchored safely in barrooms from Warrenton to Brookings, shooting pool, swapping lies over shots and beers. Lady Topophilia, when I roam far from my Milwaukee, Oregon home, I am never quite home until I have made a pilgrimage to the Willamette Valley shores, to the Willamette River shores, not until I have breathed in that heady concoction of goose poop, muck and mud, and Willamette River silt. Not until I have intruded upon the solitude of a great blue heron and sent it winging rack, 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 ponderously upriver towards Willamette Falls, beneath whose waters huge sturgeon still swim, in that same place where Clackamas Chinook villagers told stories, lived, fished, grew plump on eel, steelhead, salmon for 4,000 years. For 4,000 years. Ah, but Lady Topophilia, who could forget the nights when moonlight gleamed upon your basalt river outcroppings far above, and far below your Deschutes River waters murmured and whispered to me, and then broke free ecstatic as they rolled through White Horse and Buckskin Mary and Wapanisha Rapids, undulated through rolling Sherman and Morrow County hills, cloaked in your gown of white winter wheat. Lady Topophilia, I admire how easily and how generously your Columbia River waters heft and convey tugboats, mammoth barges laden with potatoes and wheat, how they lift and convey fishing boats, sailboards on bright waters above, but how below your deep currents still remember, still caress that motherlode of salmon runs, Celilo Falls, where your voice once sang out in 100 cataracts and chutes and waterfalls, and how that voice once mingled with the voices and the songs of Cayuse and Chinook and Nez Perce and Tenino and Umatilla and Wasco and Yakima and Shoshone and more and more and more for millennia. Lady Topophilia, you are ancient and you are ever new. From your Tillamook Bay tidelands to sunburned Steens Mountain, to green Ochocos, to Alvar Desert sands, from remote Imnaha and Basque and Rome, to south winds at Port Orford and pastoral Sweet Home. You are the dew-lipped maiden, you are the summer fruit, you are the wise autumn crone, you are the screeching wild winter hag, and I am your most ardent admirer. Oregon, muse of my heart, muse of my soul, my love for you never, ever tires. A love poem to Oregon called Lady Topophilia. It's really been an honor and a pleasure to be with you this morning, and I hope some of those stories and poems were enjoyable. I wish you all a great time in the summer. It is a time, I think, when it's a time of healing and renewal and rejuvenation and recreation and fun. So enjoy yourselves, and I look forward to having some conversation with you as well. All the best. Thanks again, and take care.
Summer sun is shining over golden land and sea, and the flowers in the hedgerow welcome butterfly and bee. Then my open heart is glowing, full of warmth for everyone, and I feel an inner beauty which reflects the summer sun. When the summer clouds of thunder bring the long-awaited rain, and the thirsty soil is moistened, and the grass is green again, then I long for summer sunshine, but I know that clouds and tears are a part of life's refreshment, like the rainbow's hopes and fears. In the of summer evening, when the dancing insects play, and in garden, street, and meadow linger echoes of the day, then my heart is full of yearning, hopes and memories flood the whole of my being, reaching inward to the corners of my soul.
As we extinguish the chalice this morning, let us carry within us the warm glow of its flame, the values it represents, and the ongoing question, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? And let us come together again next time in the spirit of peace and love.